Well, hi, and welcome to our final seminar. Again, thank you very much for all of the responses, the kind words, and the clarification of some questions and some further discussion. I want to just spend a couple of minutes with an open mic where we're in discussion mode in case you have a thought or a question or want to add something. So we're going to be applying what we've talked about in these three seminars to some specific challenges and opportunities in transitions. And I know a number of you work in this area, work with retirement and other specialty areas. So I want to just summarize and then have any questions or comments before we go to our presentation mode. And this is a kind of summation of a number of responses to questions that you've sent in or comments you've made. Remember, we're always focusing on the present moment with our clients, the choice architecture of this moment and the choice to know that whatever we think and feel and experience is what we create each moment. What we specialize in coaching, and one way of thinking about it, is breaking the script, because we're listening together with the client for a different way of understanding or approaching something. And remember, we've talked about this, and I just want to reiterate, you never have to go back into the past or to why questions. Every algorithm that determines thinking, feeling, behaving, experiencing will be presented in the process of the coaching relationship that will be important to focus on in collaboration with your client. So everything that's important is there. It occurs in the process, not just the content, but we're listening for the process of how someone engages, of what they're thinking, feeling, and experiencing, so that we collaboratively are looking at creating next steps in a meaningful and systematic way. So one final opportunity to log in. Any comments or any questions before we go to lecture mode that you want to be sure we talk about or for me to discuss briefly right now from anyone? Well, I will keep my email open even after this series if you have any questions. So I'm going to go to lecture mode. Hold on just a moment. Okay, I want to talk some about, actually first, I want to ask you to do this. I would like you to write down, as soon as you hear my question, just write down the first word or phrase that you think of. What is your unlived life? Another question to write down immediately, a phrase or just a response. What's the one thing you feel most intrinsically motivated to pursue? Write it down. We'll come back to that. Okay? I want to talk about a specific application of what we've been discussing to look at niche coaching in terms of transitions. And I'll use some specific examples here to sort of bring it alive. Practicing professionals like healthcare professionals, financial, legal professionals have in common that they've dedicated their careers to a body of knowledge. Their clients come to them for the purpose of purchasing their expertise. Their expertise to solve special problems and give specific advice is backed by professional standards, laws, codes, and a lot of elite training. Now, even with rigorous training to solve specialized problems and provide specialized advice, these professionals have probably not been trained to know themselves better, to understand the dynamics of human behavior, to pursue personal development as vigorously as they pursued professional advancement, to convert from work ethic to performance ethic, perhaps, to emotionally and strategically manage career transitions. Because most of us, I'm certainly there, assumed we'd do one thing, the profession we were trained for, all our lives. Now, another genre, performance professionals, includes actors, professional athletes. The primary challenge these clients have may be self-regulation, to stay grounded in their ideals and energy management, perhaps in the face of extraordinary demands and stimulating success. And a very common example here is retirement transitions for executives or pro athletes. Here's a lesson we can learn about the importance of self-regulation for all loss, change, and transition. Champion sports figures are alert to the importance of aftermaths, the points or play immediately following a tense or hotly contested moment of play. Both the winner and the loser of these intense encounters tend to be a sometimes compromised aftermath. The winner is so excited about the victory that carries over to affecting the next play. The loser is frustrated, which also carries into errors or trying too hard. These aftermath points and plays can be lost with errors. The wise player approaches the aftermath with self-regulation, conservatively, and with full concentration. This is exactly what we help our clients do, especially to navigate transitions for which they may have no working models and successes that extend beyond what they have ever experienced before. Here's a simple example. The announcers at a Texans game on defensive lineman Casey. Quote, "That's so often the case with young players. One good play, and then one bad one. After doing a spectacular tackle on the next play, Casey was all sides. Clearly an instance of self-regulation and being on a tilt, the excitement from making a really good player. Success does not create an immunity to failure. A loss does not foreshadow lack of confidence or disbelief. The next play is the next play. The next point is the next point. You've lost something very important. Tomorrow is still the next day." Think about this, all of you who are thinking about or work with people in transition in some way. Retirement, move to another career. A number of things that you will find yourselves perhaps doing in your coaching practice. Your next career, let's use this as an example for looking at change and transition to focus on a career change, just to concretize this and give us something specifically to ground it and illuminate it. This next career may be the aftermath of everything you've done before, everything you've worked hard for. It will stand alone on its own. Additional people who have significant challenge in dealing with emotions of a transition are the ones whose process begins with a significant or often abrupt change, a job loss, a significant relationship, a disability, a divorce, a sudden long-standing career change and then looking to perhaps a new or different career. With these changes and subsequent transitions, the need for help in regulating emotions and states of mind is important in and of itself. Then, this task becomes important because it affects other components of a situation. For example, the significant emotion of a divorce in the subsequent divorce proceedings and asset management create challenges, such as making the business aspect of the divorce only about the business of the divorce and not letting emotional factors derail logic and judgment. Studies show that even highly accomplished people close themselves to novelty as they get older. Now, the major factor is not their age, but how long they've been doing a particular thing, such as been in a particular business. People who stay in one place and one position get most entrenched. A place, for example, that I see this challenge is in family succession of business. The founder passes the company founded 32 years ago to two children to own and manage. It's a challenge. Everyone involved changes roles, relationships, functions, interaction. I've done a series of retreats with a good buddy of mine called What's Next Exec, and we have worked with executives who have been or on the verge of CEOs who are perhaps on the verge of retiring, people who own businesses on the verge of selling them, to look at what will they do next? How can they plan for this transition that is as important a piece of what they're doing in the future as the ending of this very significant career? So let's look at this back to coaching and to think about it in terms of what do clients want from us as mentor coaches. Here's what I have come to see and believe that clients want from us. The coach and client become co-authors of a new story and create a current meaning that allows the distinctness of the old versus the new, an evolving new story. And we're always teaching others how to respond to us. A client is always teaching the coach what it's like to be that client, creating an in vivo demonstration of what needs to be done, known, so that the coach can teach it back out loud. We as coaches need to be open to that learning and not let teaching the client our theories or our agenda get in the way. Although we inevitably listen within the context of our own system of meaning and knowing, we continuously bridge to the experience and the system of meaning of the client. In this co-created space, the client develops an evolving and new authentic story. So, in one way of thinking about it, what our clients want from us as coaches may be the adult version of what we as children wanted from our parents. I believe our clients want unself-conscious participation in serious work and sometimes in play to simply enjoy it. Acceptance of praise without embarrassment or deflection so that we can give it back to its creator as the self-statement that it is. Full immersion in, but not full reaction to, their full feelings, never losing sight of their internal perspective and best interest. To hope that we will see the self the client hopes to become and see the evolving news story that sometimes can get obscured from the client's view. Additionally, I believe a client wants to see at times a thought, feeling, or behavior as an answer to a question its creator has not consciously dared to ask. We need to listen for these things, I believe, to hope that we hear the silent intent embedded in the compromised result, perhaps, to see the hope camouflaged in the frustrating process, maybe simply to validate their intuition, to hope that the coach will not be awkward, self-conscious, or say anything that would distract from the client's immersion in the process. This architecture of trust silently forms while we're talking about other things. Collaborating together, even laughing together, gives oxygen to hope, highlights the relief and release of new experience, can push creativity to full flight. We also help the client mourn the old story, to know that no matter how ready to change they are, it's still like saying goodbye to an old friend who's been there a long time. The client leaves the self behind, the self of the old story. Invention can be sabotaged and creativity imprisoned by remaining in an old story, repeating the same storylines. I think Julia Cameron captured this beautifully in The Artist Way. She said, "I'm astounded that I could let go of the drama of being a starving artist. Nothing dies harder than a bad idea." We are in the present moment together and co-create a new story with our clients. We believe in someone until they can believe in themselves, and they'll teach us both why. The corollary to believing in the client is that the coach must be the kind of person in whom the client can believe and respect and trust. The client has to believe the coach will respond, guide, teach, and model in a way that facilitates the unique growth of that client. This bond, this immersion, and understanding within the present moment may be one of the most powerful and the most change-making experiences that the client has ever had. Probably the most. I remain curious about how my clients continue to write their narratives after we end formal coaching. I believe that coaching is a developmental process continuing in its influence throughout life. I've said to clients, "I'm going to be your coach for life, though regular meetings will be necessary only for a short period of time." Intervals, maybe of quarterly or annual updates, can be beneficial for both coach and client, kind of like booster shots. Witnessing a continuing developmental journey at regular intervals. In other words, we're witnessing their success and their evolving development. It doesn't have to be about problem solving or issues that get crystallized. What we do with each client is not about being right or having pristine theory or technique or even mutually idealizing achievement. But the bottom line always, does it work? Coaching allows the beauty of waking up to specific possibilities, strengths, untapped resources. We help people become more of who they really are. The client must also risk bringing an issue to the table and further that risk by looking at it. We never forget the discomfort of taking even one step into the new or different or unknown, and we resonate with that and help a client frame it as a validation of progress, a signpost of being in new territory, not an indication that your gut's telling you you're doing the wrong thing. or my intuition says that this is not right now. The exchange must be worthy and true. It must be real. The coach must be fully present. Hemingway captured this principle, I believe, when he wrote about the craft of writing. Write the truest sentence you know. As we nudge a client to consider their relationship with themselves, to develop self-empathy, we wonder sometimes out loud to look at important storylines, or even how exactly are you taking care of yourself? I may ask clients, at close to the beginning of our work, what do they do to take care of themselves? Do they work out? And we'll get in a few minutes to my not-so-gentle nudge, unless it's a reasonable science-based workout program. We'll come back to that. How are you honoring your needs and your ideals, your relationships? Have you created something now that seems to be controlling you? Are you framing yourself by your gender, your role, your purpose? Do you daily find things to be grateful for, to celebrate? An ideal coaching co-creation may be to reflect or validate the client, to tell the client what they already know and just a little bit more. This little bit more may be a challenge, a conceptualization, a nudge toward initiative or action, or a reminder to pause momentarily, to consider, to contemplate, to celebrate. Let's look, and this is in your outline, how we facilitate change in coaching. And I think there are 12 caveats in your outline. These are principles distilled that focus on facilitating change in the coaching relationship itself. 1. Each person's life story is created. Recognition and acceptance of story ownership is a prerequisite to assessment and change. This is a variation of whatever you think and feel and experience, you create each moment. Whatever you experience, you either create or accept. 2. Understanding begins with examination of which storylines work and which don't. Then, to systematically change the ones that don't work. The ones that do work need to be kept, possibly enhanced even. 3. Knowing what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. 4. Distinguish what to change, what to accept, what to let go, and what to enhance. Place energy into what works, coupled with accepting and letting go what can't be changed, can create significant effectiveness. 5. When people create their own answers, they have signed on to invest in the outcome. Our questions help direct, clarify, illuminate, maybe even story bust, but the initiation of that plan and the steps is with the client. We invest in what we co-create. We commit to what we co-create. 6. Someone has to change an internal model of assumptions, perhaps, to sustain the new story. Because assumptions were based on the old story. What worked is great, but this is an examination of what needs to be revised, changed, or created in a new way as well as what is to be sustained. Someone may have to change an internal model of assumptions about themselves in order to sustain that story. And remember, we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. So we have to recognize and perhaps help our clients recognize assumptions and beliefs and how that colors what's perceived. Assumptions manifest as feelings and behaviors. By making assumptions explicit, those which facilitate and interfere both become visible. 8. Change is a constant. It's inevitable. It's the resistance to change that generates most problems. People are most successful when they learn from yesterday, anticipate tomorrow, and integrate the impact of new experience. If someone is protesting change, they've already engaged it. 9. Small changes can lead to big changes. Issues that may seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step to take next for progress. For example, professionals get overwhelmed with the amount of tasks and responsibilities. Don't be afraid to get really simple. No matter how accomplished that professional is, focus on and clarify one issue that can be dealt with effectively within the next day. This focus on a specific action exercises effectiveness and initiates a model of mastery. We've talked before, whenever you want to change, focus on the system, not just the goal. 10. Solutions, causes, and problems are not always related and not always interconnected. The therapist attunes to problems, conflict, and development for progress to occur. Coaching uses this space to focus on creating a new story to align the client's needs and ideals to strategize systematically for the client's goal, toward the client's goal. The coach listens to join talents and strengths with possibilities and vision to strategically pursue goals. Remember, we talked about a simple example of this. How you frame something determines the mindset you boot up to deal with it. Our brain doesn't know the difference in this example between anxiety and excitement. If you frame it as anxiety, it may mean danger, better head recover. It makes sense to stop. If you frame it as excitement, as opportunity, you begin to create a next step, new neuronal networks and pathways. How you frame something is important. This may be one of the most fundamental things we do with our clients, is to help them frame how they're looking at something. This is one of the reasons, one of the only one, that I ask permission of every client I work with, that if I think it might be helpful to look at something the instant that they say it, do I have their permission to interrupt? And I give them permission to interrupt me. So when a client begins with, well, here's the problem. I know they got that down, so I'll interrupt. Let's look at the possibility instead. 11. A collaboration keeps both individuals on the same side looking at the scene together. Empathic resonance can generate an experience of feeling understood. Then you can make powerful coaching intervention with the framework of collaboration. We can ultimately get away with saying whatever we need to say to a client because they know unequivocally, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that we are totally invested in their success, that we are not judgmental, pejorative, critical, that we're totally interested in understanding and their progress. Also, validation of what's positive will have several times the effect of focus on the negative. A comment perceived as judgmental can result in a defensive reaction. So that's why I believe the collaborative framework is so important, that we together are looking at this, understanding it, and co-creating a new way of proceeding. 12. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what's not will become evident and self-perpetuate. Again, don't be afraid to be very simple with your client. A physician client who's completed the 26th grade probably has forgotten how to talk simply. Remember how you work with your client provides a model that will be imitated of how they work with their family, their colleagues, their clients, their patients. Let's talk now about your wellness story, because I think this is a really important part of what we're discussing. A significant aspect of change and transition is to incorporate a wellness story for yourself. Wellness is a mindset. This mindset gives ownership of a life story of wellness to the individual. With this ownership comes the responsibility and the privilege that each thought, feeling, experience, and behavior is created each moment. It's not there until you create it. Warren Buffett used the analogy of buying a car. He said, if you get a new car every few years, the approach would be different than if you knew from the beginning you were going to choose one car and have it for the rest of your life. You'd probably do research to know the best care for that car, probably change the oil more frequently, do everything possible for maintenance. Knowing it would be the only car for the rest of your life, you'd take meticulous care of it. Your body is the only one you'll have for the rest of your life. Your body is irreplaceable. Don't talk to me about knee replacements. Your body is irreplaceable. Everything about its care and maintenance matters. It reflects the cumulative care you take of it. Wellness integrates mind, body, and spirit with a balanced flow of energy. Wellness is a system of energy. And it's an ongoing process of choices. It's never static. We never stay at the same place. So it needs to consistently be assessed. Wellness is not something you begin to plan at age 65 or even at 50. It's a choice you make every day. That's what writes your wellness story. Here's an illustration of those little choices. Overall wellness is not based on some big monumental choice, but on little things. If you plan to run 30 minutes on the treadmill, but after 10 get off, convince you're a little bit stiff, it's one small choice, no big deal. Nobody ever had a heart attack because of 20 minutes less on the treadmill every day. You resolve to cut empty calories, but you grab a few M&Ms, no more than four, from the candy bowl, not really thinking about the choice, because no single M&M, not even four, ever caused anybody to have diabetes. But if you think about a little bit wider lens on this, you take in 100 calories more each day than you burn. In 1 year, you gain 9 pounds. It goes the other way, too. Our wellness success is the cumulative result of daily choices that we don't rationalize away or justify into oblivion. We're in a wellness revolution. The science of wellness in aging. We understand more about our bodies at the cellular level. We understand healthy aging. We can live healthier lives than anyone in all of biological time. It's taken a while, though, because health is biologically way more complex than the disease. So let's look at decay versus growth. The story that we engage with our bodies is one of two possibilities, decay or growth. Dr. Henry Lodge Jr. is the author of Younger Next Year and a companion book, Younger Next Year for Women. I was introduced to his work when we presented at a venue, and I've followed his work meticulously since then, incorporated into some training I do. Lodge found, and he's devoted 35 years of his professional life as an internist in New York City to wellness research, he found that 70% of aging is not aging, but decay. If we assume that ailments and deterioration are a normal part of growing old, and that we diminish activity and deteriorate physically as well as in quality of life, the change at the cellular level will be decay. Inactivity and the absence of signals to grow result in body and brain decay. Another story is that both decay and functional aging are largely optional. This alternate story is growth and wellness. We send signals to our bodies by daily exercise, emotional meaning, good nutrition, zest for living. Here's a quote from Lodge in his book, Younger Next Year. Steady exercise is a coded message to your body and your mind. In 20 years, failure to exercise 6 days a week will seem as self-destructive as smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day. So this new wellness story includes a central storyline of exercise. No negotiation, no excuses, serious exercise. According to Lodge, after age 50, 6 days a week for the rest of your life is mandatory. And he emphasizes and has found in research that 4 of those 6 days of exercise need to be serious aerobic exercise the rest of your life. Here's an illustration of that. Biologically, your body knows only 2 things, growth or decay. Decay, blood vessels go to every millimeter of your body and each bathe cells in repair or inflammation. Exercise heals wounded blood vessels, and it's wounded blood vessels that kill you. Mortality falls with exercise. Of several thousand people surveyed, 3 activities stood out above all others as ones that prompted procrastination. More than anything else, people put off exercise, nutritional plan, retirement plan. What Lodge found is that a task such as exercise needs to be treated with the same mindset as work. With work, you don't get up every day and debate about whether you will or won't go to work, or whether you'll take off a couple of days or just skip it, or bargain with yourself to say, well, I'm not going to, but next Tuesday I'll really get with it. You get up, you go to work. In school, later, work, you show up. It's an organizing force. It's a deeply etched default model. Exercise can be the same mindset. According to Lodge, daily exercise, like work, should be right up there, trumped only by serious illness or family needs. The default story. Now, as a mentor coach, you're not a personal trainer. You're not a dietitian. You're not giving directives. But you can ask questions and then listen to how your client presents the choices they make in writing their wellness story. You're always free to challenge the choices or the trail of logic leading to them and their fulfillment. Here's what Lodge points out, and this I think is really important. 2 things above all others create neurogenesis, the creation of new cells in your brain, an enriched environment, and exercise. An enriched environment, intellectual and emotional stimulation, creates more complex brain cells. That's exactly what we do as coaches. The hippocampus is the part of the brain specifically connected with two things, creativity and memory. Mice from an enriched environment have a 15% increase in the number of their hippocampal cells. Physical exercise increased the number of cells in the hippocampus by almost 100%. And remember, hippocampus, the site of creativity and memory. And there have been non-invasive studies more recently that have found very analogous results in University of Hamburg medical students, London taxicab drivers. So, another related finding, chronic stress impairs neurogenesis, the number of cells in the hippocampus. Memory and creativity decrease with chronic stress. So, think about that and think about, I have actually sent, as a very specific way of nudging, Lodge's book or his companion book to a client just so that they can be informed and that we can spend our time on the things that we really should be spending our time on, but not neglecting the big picture. Now, here's another illustration of how we can self-reflect and evaluate in that. A study by Princeton psychologist Dr. Emily Pronin found that in making financial decisions, now hang with me through this example here, in making financial decisions, especially how much money we put away toward retirement, it depends, is directly related to how clearly we can picture our future selves. When someone can picture themselves at a point in time of 70 or 80 or 90, they save almost three times as much for the future in retirement as people who can't quite picture themselves. Now, beginning on the West Coast, there have been some studies with computer-enhanced imaging to show people, for example, what it will look like 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now if they continue to smoke versus if they don't. If they continue at a particular weight versus gaining a few pounds a year. So those computer-enhanced images can help people picture their future selves. So the conclusion of all of this may simply be that if we ask a client to imagine themselves in the future in a particular way, it might help them in a specific way. Now, I want to cover a couple of things before we wrap up. One is how your story hides in plain sight. Think about the difference of people who lead a reactive life, where circumstances and others determine decisions and directions, who talk about what they're going to do, who do the same thing, though, week after week. By contrast, those who accomplish and believe create a very different story. Their lives embody that story for themselves and others. Their story, their plot, in clear and sharp focus, co-created perhaps with us, guides them, orients them to the script they consciously write. They recognize, own, and determine that script. Now, through these seminars, we've talked about how someone's story is hiding in plain sight. It's in the open, waiting to be seen, that every algorithm that determines thought, feeling, experience, emotion will be manifest in the coaching process with you, for you and the client to look together at this and look at change, at transformation, first at understanding. So in these seminars, we've been discussing how to help people write the next chapters of their life and business story. Consider just for a moment these questions. If your story to this point would be published as a book, what would the title and subtitle be? If your story builds to a major achievement in the near future, what will that be? Describe a scenario in your story in which you, the protagonist, faced a major setback that brought out the best in you to successfully navigate it. What aspects of your story do you want to enhance? What aspects of your story do you want to leave out as you move forward? What events or process foreshadows your next success? What roles will the most important people in your life play as you go forward? What is your spiritual essence? And remember, you don't have to be religious in order to have spiritual meaning, significant purpose. I want to look now with a wide-angle lens. First wide-angle, then time-lapse photography. I want to look with you at the life stages of success. Success may mean different things at different points in adult life, perhaps different at each developmental phase. I want to share with you a quote that captures way better and way more than I could summarize or tell you. Here's how it may look in a relationship. This is from Ruby Dee, I Dream a World. It takes a long time to be really married. One marries many times at many levels in a marriage. If you have more marriages than divorces within the marriage, you're lucky and you stick it out. Here's a way of looking at individual success. This is Wolfgang von Goethe. Whoever in middle age attempts to realize the wishes and hopes of his early youth invariably deceives himself. Each 10 years of a person's life has its own fortunes, its own hopes, its own desires. Dreams change. We realize some, relinquish some, create new ones. Growth is flexible and dynamic. One example, once you've achieved monetary success and professional privilege, you can figure out what's really important. Now, ideally, that's before you do that, and it will really have meaning. But a caveat, be sure success doesn't constrict you from doing what you really want to do. One more quote. Here's that time-lapse photo from a different perspective. This is from Emerson. Not in his goals, but in his transitions, man is great. Now, I'd like to do a final exercise with you. I'd like you to get very relaxed where you are. Be aware of how comfortable your seat and fully and secure your seat is holding you. Close your eyes and take a deep breath in of relaxation. Breathe out any tension. One more deep breath in. Breathe out any tension. Still with your eyes closed. Imagine you're 90 years old. look back at yourself now. Look at how things will turn out on your present path, your trajectory. How would they turn out on a different path? Does the difference between the two suggest a change? Or more broadly, a transition? What kind? Be specific. From 90 looking back, what do you see that you might have really seen right now but didn't acknowledge? What do you feel about your situation now? What do you want to tell yourself now? For example, any terms or cautions or risks or possibilities that you should have taken. Now, keep your eyes closed and look carefully at your 90-year-old eyes, your face, your hands. Your 90-year-old body. Look around at where you are. And look at who's there with you. Remember, you always know more than you think. I want to go back to the question, and hopefully you've written the answer to, what is your unlived life? I'll tell you the backstory of that. I mentioned my buddy and I who did retreats for business owners, executives about to retire, knowing that they needed to work on retirement and do some things because they'd done one thing all their lives, been majorly successful, but now they were looking at significant changes. We did a 2.5-day retreat, and I had a number of people who approached me at some point or at the end of that retreat and said, you know, the most powerful, the most meaningful moment of this entire 2.5 days at this beautiful place was the one question, what's your unlived life, when you asked us to write that down. They looked at that with often a very stark realization and an unexpected awareness of that may be something that can light a path or be a catalyst for new or different development going forward. I'm going to take us off lecture mode. If you have questions or comments, I'm very interested in hearing from you. So, thoughts, questions, comments, anybody want to add or ask anything? Well, I know you've each sent in, not each, I know a number of you have sent in questions, comments, things that you want to be sure we cover, and I really appreciate that, and I hope I've wrapped that those things that you've mentioned into our discussion so that it has a specific meaning for you in addition to what was planned. I want to tell you a little bit. I don't like upsells. I hate that, but I will mention going forward. If there's no question or comment, anybody want to say anything? Okay, then. there's a CTA series coming up at this time called Breaking the Script, which is what we specialize in as coaches, is helping a client break their script. I'm also going to be offering a very limited seating for 12 people, and I want to invite you personally, because this is by personal invitation, the one training I'm doing this year, called the Neuroscience of Mentor Coaching. It's brain-based strategies for transformative change. So let me know if you may be interested in doing that. The training begins next month. So thank you all very much for your participation, the comments, the questions that you've sent in. I hope this has been helpful. I'll be eager to hear from you. And if you have more questions or comments, I welcome those. So thank you very, very much. It's been a privilege to collaborate with you. Take good care of yourself. See you guys.